Hi, and welcome to another podcast from The Human Diver, where we are looking to apply counter-errorism techniques in diving. By that we mean human factors and non-technical skills. Our goal is to give you the knowledge and skills so that your dives are safer and more enjoyable. The podcast is a mixture of short podcasts based on the blogs we have and longer podcasts, which will be interviews or discussion topics. Show notes will be provided so you can dig deeper if you want. Ready to jump in? I've been asked a number of times to comment on a hypothetical event published on the RAID website on the 7th of August 2024 as a learning opportunity. However, it appears that the story wasn't hypothetical and the person involved wasn't directly consulted about what happened. The event had a bad outcome and the goal of the analysis was to look at the event through the lens of learning. This review is based on a copy of the story which was retrieved on the 12th of August. The review is available as a PDF from the show notes as well as here and the original blog. The reason for providing all formats is that some people may find it easier to read the comparison side by side. Framing. How we frame learning opportunities and the language we use is critical for two reasons. Firstly, we need to create the environment for others to learn by showing the analysis is informed, critical, and focused on actions or behaviors. And secondly, because when we focus on the context and the conditions, we create an empathetic response to those involved. Nobody intends to have a bad outcome. The best analyses are those where you walk away saying, yes, I can see how they would have done that given their circumstances. Not, I wouldn't have done it that way because it's obvious it would go wrong. The diving industry has a long way to go to bridge this gap in terms of learning. This isn't surprising given that with the exception of the work by The Human Diver, there aren't any training programs that focus on learning-focused outputs, nor are human factors, psychological safety, and a just culture comprehensively taught in diver education programs. The currency of safety is information, Ivan Pupalidi, PhD. If we don't get the correct information in the correct frame of reference following an adverse event, then we're not going to be learning very much. We will continue to tell divers and instructors to be more careful, to pay more attention, to better manage risk, to not lose situation awareness. These statements don't help learning because they don't explain how the failure occurred. The following is a review of the blog as published by RAID, with my comments about each section.
Accident analysis, a story of poor judgment and broken promises.
This starts with a framing effect, by starting the story with a negative perspective that carries through. It is much more effective to be neutral, for example, a DCS event, which provides learning around decision-making and external pressures.
A hypothetical near miss that has a lot to teach us.
Hypothetical, as it transpires, this wasn't a hypothetical event, but rather based on a real event where those directly involved were not consulted, and so trust and independence can be eroded very quickly.
The difference between going home after a day of diving or being strapped onto a hospital gurney while being prepped for several hours in a recompression chamber can be the result of a margin of error as thin as a human hair or a lapse of judgment as wide as the Channel Tunnel.
Lapse of judgment as wide as the Channel Tunnel, more framing effects. In hindsight, it is really easy to identify the gaps in what should have, could have, or the observer would have done. These are counterfactuals. Fundamentally, what people do in the moment makes sense to them. And it is their local rationality we need to explore, not our post-event judgment when we know the outcomes.
Perhaps related to that, a strange habit of divers, especially technical divers, is to engage in what's called accident analysis. This exercise may appear to be ghoulish to outsiders, an act of morbid voyeurism, but technical diving is a high-risk endeavour, and it's better to learn from the mistakes of others rather than educating oneself firsthand. That means digging around in other people's misery to find what turned a great day into a nightmare is a necessary and useful exercise.
More critical and negative language, which makes it harder to share the stories in the first person, to find out how it made sense. Effective accident analysis is unemotive and factual and focuses on the facts, context, actions, and local rationality of those involved.
And that's what this is, just a useful exercise and nothing more.
This could be construed as a defensive statement. This statement could be removed.
So, let's do a little digging. I've avoided using names and the location has been fudged, but what follows could easily be based on an actual event. Your job is to identify the points where things went pear-shaped. Good luck, and the prize at the end is that you can avoid making the same mistakes yourself. I hope.
This was based on an actual event, and social media responses quickly identified this. This reduces the trust in the organisation and people producing the analysis.
Accident analysis is often difficult. Unfortunately, part of the challenge when deconstructing any diving incident is it's often difficult to unravel which of the two extremes, human hair or 45-metre-wide tunnel, was a contributing factor.
Accident analysis should not be difficult when the people are alive, and you can speak to them using a curious, learning-focused approach, not one based on blame and judgment. Aviation achieves this by having a just culture. My master's thesis was all about the barriers to learning from adverse events, and many of those barriers come from the organisational and commercial structure of diving.
But occasionally, the answer is obvious and stands out like a nun dealing blackjack in a Las Vegas casino. Here's one of those nun in Vegas's scenarios.
If it was that obvious, wouldn't those involved know with 100% certainty that the activity would end as it did? Again, more negative framing surrounding the event and how it develops. What you look for is what you find, and confirmation bias are recognised phenomena in safety science.
Let's say this incident involved two divers, both certified instructors, one a very experienced technical instructor but from someplace else and a stranger to local conditions. The other was a much less experienced technical instructor but a local diver familiar with local dive sites and conditions.
This sets the scene in terms of experience and knowledge. This is good.
The highly experienced instructor was teaching a course to the lesser experienced one. So, the dive you're being asked to deconstruct was a training dive. For the record, the course was a Trimix side mount rebreather class, a highly technical program, without a doubt.
Useful information, although without a doubt is not needed, and infers that the failure modes would be obvious.
The dive was made from a boat working in an area where the prevailing current is always a factor.
Useful information.
If you are thinking God's Pocket off Canada's Vancouver Island, the Strait of Messina between Sicily and the Italian mainland, or the Gulf Stream as it blasts along Florida's east coast on its way to the British Isles and Northern Europe, you have the right idea. Several knots on a normal day, strong up and down welling on an extreme day. Not conditions for the faint-hearted, and always a physical and mental workout.
Language is again setting the reader up to judge the situation. Prevailing currents are indeed always a factor. But if you don't know the area, how would you know about the currents and therefore how to deal with them?
The subject dive was on an extreme day.
Extreme. Emotive language. Without context, this sets the scene for a potentially critical judgment.
During the pre-dive briefing, the charter captain mentioned the current was blowing. However, our divers opted to go ahead with their planned dive to 42 metres, about 138 feet, with around 45 minutes of bottom time.
What was normal? Had they done this dive before without an adverse outcome? What were the social, cultural, and commercial conditions that led to the course running as it did? Choices are easy to identify after the event.
According to all reports, the dive was a challenge.
Did these reports that the author used include all members of the dive team, including the student and DCS victim?
The experienced technical instructor admitted afterwards it was one of his toughest dives.
The word admitted has a negative connotation. Described is a better word.
But he and his student put in the planned bottom time in spite of everything. It seems that during their ascent, holding the required staged decompression stops was a challenge.
In spite infers that there were other drivers present. What were they? Is this unexpected? Diving in Malta on the La Polynesia is a challenge due to currents. Big Brothers is a challenge.
Partly because of this and because the student indicated, "I'm tired." The pair added more than 10 minutes to the 6-metre stop.
The fact that the team added 10 minutes to the 6-metre stop should be seen as a good thing, not a bad thing.
Back on the surface, the student showed signs of a serious, possibly neurological, DCS hit. Evacuation ensued, followed by recompression and a hospital stay.
Learning could be discussed here. How did they manage the emergency situation? What is chamber availability like? What were the challenges faced? What experience did they have prior that helped them?
The required reports were filed, and during the resulting investigation, it was discovered the student had a history of DCS and other medical challenges, including a suspected PFO. However, these episodes were never mentioned in medical waivers or pre-course conversations or dive briefings, nor had incident reports about them ever been submitted to the agency.
Discovered infers the student was hiding the fact. That may be true, but it sets an accusatory tone. A better way of writing this would be, the required reports were filed, and during the resulting investigation, it was noted that the student, For a genuine learning perspective, we must look to understand why this is the case, because there are many instructors I know of who have had DCS and have suspected medical issues but can't find a reason. It would be easy to judge this as a normalization of risk. At the same time, this is human nature. We don't think something is a real hazard until we encounter it. We make judgments based on recalled episodes. Another finding in my research was that if the industry actively or passively suppresses adverse events, which it arguably does, then people don't know the scale of the problem. Note, the WRSTC medical declaration forms do not include DCS or PFO as events to be declared. It is understood this was done on purpose to limit workload. A quick check of three agencies indicates that instructors do not require DCS events to be declared.
In this case, someone dodged a bullet for sure. This was a near miss that could easily have had a much worse outcome, but instead, it turned out to be a good learning opportunity for us all. Now, did you spot the errors?
Learning opportunity only if the contextual factors and their local rationality comes to life.
Diving, especially technical rebreather diving, is about balance. It's about knowing limits and working within them.
Limits, agreed. At the same time, we cannot find all the limits ourselves, and we need to create an environment where near misses are discussed without judgment so we can use others' experiences. Beyond that, what are the limits we need to know? We have number limits, minimum gas, maximum depth, no decompression limit, etc. But this dive was all within those limits and yet still had a bad outcome. Knowing limits is not as black and white as it sounds.
For example, most would agree a sensible starting point would be to draw boundaries around a training dive. Training dives are supposed to be controlled and somewhat protected. Not necessarily easy, but not one of the hardest dives an experienced technical instructor has made, even when it's a rebreather course. Accordingly, a training dive is not the best platform from which to launch an all-out attack on any limits or to beat down the best practices that support them like fence posts. Add to that, what for most divers, even on a good day, would be challenging conditions, and the odds against a good outcome are building. And then, opting to push limits and undertake a tough dive in unfamiliar gear, managing a side mount rebreather, and bailout bottles adds another level of complexity.
For example, to another level of complexity. This whole section is informed by outcome and severity biases. If the diver hadn't had the DCS event, would this story have been discovered and the learning opportunity presented? What is not discussed until now is the decision-making processes of the instructor and the student. How did it make sense? Not why did they do what they did? The latter focuses on the individuals, the former on their decision-making processes. Questions: why this location? How much time was available for the class given the instructor was traveling in from elsewhere? What other locations are present? Saying unfamiliar gear, but this was a 42-meter, 45-minute dive, which was likely at the end of the course, so shouldn't have been unfamiliar. What stopped the instructor from thumbing the dive? What social or cultural pressures were present? Power dynamics don't just happen top down, they also happen bottom up.
Put all this in a blender and give it a stir, and most would consider the results a nasty concoction, something to be avoided. And yet, all this happened.
Only because we know it ended up as a bad outcome. How many similar conditions are encountered when there isn't such an outcome? Critical language that infers it would be easy to spot this situation developing.
Certainly, we could all point fingers, but what are the lessons? When and where did this all start to go wobbly?
The language above has already started the mindset of blame and finger pointing.
Perhaps we can start with a little self-reflection.
This is much better language.
As a community, we have a loose approach to applying what we know is best practice to every dive we make. We get complacent. Also, too many experienced instructors allow slop when they apply the spirit of the law to the advice offered in course standards. Some also forget that not everyone has their experience and comfort when conditions turn tough. Of course, this attitude is ill-advised. But was that attitude a factor in this case, and it is really that unusual?
This is useful in a general sense, but how does it apply to this particular case? The value of a debrief is when you focus on specifics and not generalities. And the only way to get specifics is to speak to all of those involved. This is a hypothetical case, but the social media posts indicate that it is based on a real event. The industry does not manage quality as well as it could do. Feedback from courses is needed, but there is enough fear of the system and social pressure that indicates that drift is normal, and unless something major occurs that can't be hidden, the drift continues. Furthermore, once outside of the training system, there is no real interest by the agencies about events that occur, even if they are indicative of systemic weaknesses.
Diving in marginal environmental conditions is always a dodgy choice. On this dive, opting to stay down for more than 40 minutes rather than calling the dive early was an interesting choice. Was this a factor? And again, doesn't this sort of thing often happen? Was it a choice you would make?
Marginal, not needed, and judgmental. What does marginal mean? To whom? Opting. What were the drivers for this? Were hours needed? What was the site? There is no rationale provided here or in the social media posts from the student. Choices. This is a difficult question to answer and is rhetorical in the frame of the post. If you knew with 100% certainty that the event would end up badly, of course not. But we don't know that. We have to look at the drivers and context and match those, not the outcomes. Outcomes rarely add value to learning because we know them.
In addition, when it comes to evaluating the environment, should a visiting instructor call the shots? Should the student, and if not, was going ahead after the captain's briefing an acceptable course of action? Was that a factor? Was this mucha bravado or something many of us have done several times, so who are we to throw stones?
Calling the shots. This is a great series of questions and should be considered and addressed during the class setup. Interestingly, any diver calling any dive at any time, and yet it isn't that easy. It is why psychological safety is critical in diving, but it isn't explicitly taught what are the barriers and how to create it.
How about diving on any CCR when the workload is high because of heavy current? Work of breathing can cloud good decision making. Could that have contributed? How many of us would have thumbed the dive much, much earlier? What's that thing about any diver calling any dive at any time? Is that just BS or does it really happen?
Again, more useful questions to consider. The problem is that the scenario has been set up as blame someone rather than look at the conditions surrounding this. Research from others and my own has shown that the more context you include in a story, the more empathy you have with those involved. If the goal was to create curiosity and learning, then put these questions at the start and ask the question, how did it make sense for these people to do what they did? Not what you would have done knowing what the outcome was. With hindsight, we can easily join the dots.
I guess an obvious issue is all the missing information about the student's previous DCS episodes. Sharing it, actually a requirement, for sure would have changed things, should have changed things. But what on earth made the student think it was okay not to mention anything about all that? Do we, as a group, brush those things aside because we have a couple of $1,000 of kit on our wrist, tracing our decompression stress? After all, shouldn't all that technology be enough? Have we created a culture that promotes technical divers as invulnerable beings above the gas laws and the constraints of basic physiology? Do we accept hiding important information and telling lies because of that? And is there an incentive to fudge a little and try to wing it when the student has paid a bunch of money for the instructor's board and lodging and an airline ticket? Could that have been a factor?
From discussions with the student and a statement from his buddy on a course which finished the day before, a course that also had the same instructor, the prior DCS event involving the student 4 months prior was covered on a number of occasions, and so both the instructor and their buddy on the prior course knew about the February 2024 DCS event and it was accepted. Therefore, it isn't clear where this judgment and statement comes from or what the purpose is.
How about the agency? After all, both divers were members of a respected agency. Both were technical instructors. Should the agency have made its standards and the level of caution and thoughtfulness it expects from its instructors clearer to them? But that's all covered in the general diving standards and membership agreement. Surely.
Agency points. These are fair questions to ask too. At the same time, there is always a gap between work as imagined and work as done. What should be done as written in standards and procedures and what actually happens? Many, most, agencies do not check on competence and knowledge of standards post-induction.
In the final analysis, perhaps many factors influenced the pair's decision to dive. What do you think? What's your opinion? Where did it go wrong? And how can we make sure things like this stop happening? Because really, we have to stop things like this happening. In this case, nobody died, but does that make it okay?
The problem is that as a community, we don't have a culture where we can ask the curious questions, where we want to really understand the pressures involved and make them public, where social and professional judgment happens, where we don't formally teach the topics, human factors, non-technical skills, psychological safety, and just culture, because there isn't the financial business case for it. As such, what happens is we end up with incomplete stories, and people fill in the gaps with what they think should have happened or what they think did happen. There are a number of things to stop here. We aren't going to stop DCS, but we can minimize the likelihood and provide medical cover and O2. So practice these skills, not just talk about them. We can stop the hiding of near misses by creating a learning culture, but that requires organizational leadership to make that happen. Unfortunately, the business case for safety is hard to make when the organizations have little apparent interest in what happens outside the training system, and even in the training system, as long as divers aren't harmed. We can stop a reduction in standards by stopping the drive to the bottom when it comes to cost and quality. The majority of quality management in the diving industry would not be described as QM in any other high-risk activity. There is a difference between competence and compliance. We can stop creating hypothetical scenarios which are based on real events to get points across and start using known and effective human factors and safety science practices to learn from adverse events. There are always multiple stories present in an event. In this case, we don't have detailed responses from the student, the instructor, or the captain of the dive boat. Social media posts are available, but these will only recount the story that wants to be told rather than the context-rich stories which will describe the workarounds, adaptations, and modifications that are part of normal work. The current reports don't explain the local rationality of each of the stakeholders. I would argue that this is because of the culture present in diving, which is often focused on blame rather than learning. Blame is the enemy of safety, Nancy Leveson. While the published article aimed to create a learning opportunity, the tone at the start is very much framed around that they did wrong. Can you spot where it went wrong? Rather than the learning position, which would have been focused on what made sense to those involved at the time. If we start to introduce blame, especially if those involved haven't been part of the conversation, then parties will get defensive and will only state what they want to disclose to protect themselves. This means we, as observers or readers, will fill in the gaps with what we think should have happened. We tell a story that didn't exist. Note, these biases and concepts also apply to the readers or observers of the original web article. We are filling in gaps because we don't know what the explicit and implicit goals were. The quality of reports, even in established environments, varies. If you want to see what a neutral accident report looks like for what is an apparently obvious cause behind the grounding of a vessel, visit the Danish Maritime Investigation Board, link in show notes. Compare this to the linked report of a $450 million B-1B loss from the US Air Force in January 2024, where you can easily play spot the counterfactual in the summary. Additional learning opportunities? There are several blogs linked in the show notes which will help build your knowledge about framing and learning from adverse events. There is no silver bullet answer to creating successful outcomes. What is clear from multiple domains, fatalities rarely help learning because the decision maker is normally dead, emotions are high, and defensive barriers are raised. Therefore, we should focus on those events where there is someone to have a conversation with and where we can understand their local rationality. That can only happen with a shift in paradigm around safety, not the absence of accidents, but the presence of capacities and capabilities that allow us to predict, monitor, adapt, and learn during diving operations. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to know more about what was discussed in this episode, head over to the Human Diver website at thehumandiver.com, where you will find details about our education programs, the If Only documentary, the book Under Pressure, and the many, many blogs we have published there. If you think others should listen and learn, consider sharing the link. Thank you.